May I speak in the words of God, our Creator, Redeemer, and Sustainer. Amen. As yet another invitation to a Zoom meeting dropped into my inbox, and I accepted the invitation and placed it in my diary, I began to wonder if there would ever be any space in my diary again. That's an odd thing to say when we're supposed to have so much time and space at the moment. Zoom meetings seem to last a lot longer than ordinary meetings, probably because no one has anywhere else to go to except another Zoom meeting. And I was talking to my son last night, who used to work as a creative media designer, and much of his life was always spent on screens. He was asking me, "Mum, you do take a break every 20 minutes, don't you?" And I said to him, "Well, no, because we're in the middle of a meeting or we're in the middle of worship." And he said, "But how long are your Zoom meetings lasting?" And I said, "Well, yesterday there was one of an hour and a half and one of 2 hours." And he said, "But that's too long. You can't stay in front of a screen for that long without taking a break. That's why you're so tired by the end of the day." And as I thought about that and read the words of Jesus in our reading from John today, I began to think about, what are we doing? What are we as church doing, but also as people at the moment? In the words in John's Gospel, chapter 15, verses 18 to 21, Jesus says to his disciples, "If you belong to the world would love you as its own. Because you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. Therefore, the world hates you." Hate is a very strong word, and I wouldn't go so far as to say what we're living is that. Just that actually, the big question for me at the moment, leading a church, and a church that claims to be inclusive, is how do we do church when a quarter of our congregation are unable to access the whizzy nature of the world? How do we give something to all people, wherever they are, and whatever age, and whatever stage, about the world and God's love for them, when they can't necessarily, and actually don't want, to access the whizzy world? I was talking to somebody yesterday who said, "I'm really sorry, but I just don't want to get into all of that." And I can completely understand them. There has been a massive rush to put everything online, of course, and rightly so, so that people can listen to sermons like this one, or see reflections, they can watch videos. They can even see the people that they would usually go to church with on a Sunday. And all of that is really good and great. But let's not pretend that it takes the place of human contact, of touching, of body language. Because actually, when you're watching somebody on a screen, there's a whole lot of other stuff that might be going on behind the scenes. And actually, it doesn't make up for not seeing people. It is the best we can do at the moment. But I'm loath to get trapped into the whizziness of life. If you think about Jesus, he didn't like the whizziness of the temple. He didn't like how it had become so worldly. He didn't like how the scribes and the Pharisees treated those who were marginalised and on the outside, asking for bigger and bigger tax amounts before they could come in to pray to God. And actually, if you were disabled or a woman or a leper or ill in any kind of way that they deemed you were unfit in, you were not allowed to even go into the central part of the temple. You had to stay in the outer courtyards. Jesus confronts the scribes and the Pharisees at every opportunity about how they are interpreting and administering the law for the people in front of them. And he says to them time and time again, your ways are not the ways of God. You have your ways and your minds set on human things, not on divine things. What is it that God asks you to do? That's the question he asked them then. That's the question that we are asked now. What is God asking of us at this time? Not what is the world asking of us at this time, but what is God asking of us at this time? I think it's a really, really important question, because Jesus moved away from the whizziness of the temple, from the worldliness, and he moved into places where he could be at ease with people. He sat with the woman at the well. He went to dinner with Simon and some of the other Pharisees. He definitely went very often to Bethany, to Mary and Martha and Lazarus, and sat and reflected and talked with them. How many other people did he do that with that we don't actually have the stories about in our Bibles? There must have been hundreds, if not thousands, of people whom he connected with just by sitting in their space, reflecting and contemplating where they were at, whilst they reflected and contemplated where he was at. That mutual interaction between God and humanity is what we can't replace by the whizziness of the world. It cannot be replaced online or with Zoom. It's a good thing, and we can do what we can do. But I'm not sure that we should be pressurized into getting whizzier and whizzier, making more and more online content. People are drowning in online content at the moment. If my life is anything to go by, I have 3 phones and a computer on daily, and they are going most of the time, all of the time. Actually, I don't need any more online content, thank you very much. And nor, I suspect, do many other people. And as I was thinking about that mutual interaction between God and humanity, humanity and God, I began to realise that actually the church has an amazing gift that it can give into the world and to humanity at this time. It's a gift that has been developed over the last 2 millennia. It's a gift that some people have been particularly called to. And it is a gift that I think we need to maybe go back to now and resurrect. The gift is that of reflection and contemplative prayer. We have a massive tradition over the last 2,000 years of Christian contemplative prayer. Some would call it mindfulness now. And I remember when everybody started coming out and saying how wonderful mindfulness was, thinking, well, yes, but that's what the church has been doing for the last 2,000 years. That's what monks and nuns do. That's what we all do, actually, in our prayer lives. We contemplate and we reflect. When I started my ordination training, the first module was called Doing Theology. And I remember getting really excited that this was going to be an amazing thing that I had never encountered before. Until my mum actually said to me, well, I don't know what you're getting so excited about. It's just thinking, but with a big word. actually what happens in ordination training and throughout your curacy, and then as you go further into ministry, is you develop a very habitual habit of theological reflection. Every single aspect of life becomes part of the whole of God's plan. And our job as clergy are to take the time to reflect and contemplate. Not necessarily to jump and react to the worldly view that is going on. We have this great tradition that we can perhaps give to the world in this situation where so much needs to be reflected upon. Not just the lives of those who have died, but on the inequalities in our lives and in our communities, which have been shown to be very wanting at this time. I read an article today, and the writer of the article writes, "The consumer culture built since the Second World War exists to destroy union, to break communion, to collapse community, to eviscerate solidarity. Each in the cell of himself is almost convinced of his freedom," is how W.H. Auden put it. The divisiveness that has overwhelmed our political discourse cannot stand. If you wish now that your government had listened to the experts on infectious disease, go and listen to what the climate change experts know right now is going to happen over the next 30 years. A recent study charting the inevitable displacement of Americans from the eastern seaboard estimated the number of internal refugees at 13 million. That's not a problem that can be solved by a huge military thrown against foreign opponents. It can only be solved by collectively accepted information and collaboration. I think the writer of that article is absolutely right. This is a big lesson in how community could work. We have seen people sacrificing their own lives to serve others. Many of us are lonely and are trapped in our own homes. Life is not easy, and yet we make that sacrifice to save other lives as well as the NHS. And talking to people on the phone on a daily basis, I know how much work is going on in our community, from our schools to our counsellors, to the churches, to the shops, to the delivery drivers, as well as the NHS workers and the care workers. So many people are doing so much. But if we do not take time to reflect and contemplate the changes that have happened to us, then we just go running back into the world and all its whizziness and all its divisiveness. The words that Jesus says to his disciples follow on from the beginning of chapter 15, where he's talking about himself as being the true vine, and my Father is the vine grower. He's talking about those who abide in him. "I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me, you can do nothing." I love that word abide, and I've spoken about it before at church, because it's about actually really dwelling in something, really dwelling in a place or a person, really dwelling in a situation. Actually, reflection and contemplation means we need to take time to really dwell in what has happened before we can make any decision about what we do as we go forward. And also, things are changing on a daily basis. It's really hard to make a plan for what you might do as we go forward when everything around you is changing. So the gift we have is abiding, dwelling, reflection, contemplation. And actually, isn't that the bit that is inclusive? Because we can all do that wherever we are. We don't need a computer. We don't need a phone. We don't need to have downloaded the next whizzy app. We don't need to have sent on the next little video. We don't need to have put all our meetings online and all our content online. Actually, just sitting and contemplating the love of God. How do you abide in Jesus at this time? And how and what is this situation teaching you about your relationships with one another, with your community, and more importantly, with God and the wider world? We have learnt that there's a massive link between Wuhan in China, Lombardy in Italy, and the offices of the skyscrapers in New York. It's called air, and we all breathe the same air. We live on the same planet. We might worship different gods, we might have different cultures, but at the heart of all of us is our linked humanity. That interaction between God and humanity and God is the same for all of us wherever and whatever we call our God. I want to encourage us then, as the people we are, to take time each day to contemplate, to pray, to reflect. Even if it's just sitting and listening for the sounds around you and noticing how that impacts on your mind and your body. You can hear quite a lot of different sounds now with the lack of traffic. Or maybe it's just about sitting in very quiet, maybe not even silence, but just quiet each day and trying to think about what it is that God would want us to be doing and saying at this time without reaching for your smartphone, looking at the next Zoom invite and planning the future. We need to abide more than we have abided in a long time now. We need to sit with and dwell with our God. Amen.